Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
Hello.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Seriously. We're going to go straight in with some of your emails, starting with this one from Matthew, who titles his email Seriously Fanboying. Good subject line, Matthew. And says, "Hi, Caroline and Anna. I just want to say I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I particularly enjoyed the discussions of Disney Pixar's Inside Out, the in-depth arguments over Harry Potter's deficient democracy. Incidentally, we haven't talked about Harry Potter for ages. I feel like maybe we should rectify that. And the recommendations of My Mad Fat Diary and Broad City, the latter has since become one of my favourite comedy shows, which is really nice to hear. And then he adds, might I suggest you talk about Parks and Recreation, which in my view is the greatest comedy series ever made. Which is interesting, because I don't know about you, but I've watched, I think, the first 3 episodes of Parks and Recreation, and I really struggled with it. I found it a bit dull.
I think I've only seen 1 episode of Parks and Rec in full. I don't really remember what I thought about it. So I think maybe it's time for us to take another chance.
Yeah, I think we should have another go, especially since I've been told by a friend of mine who really, really loves it that almost the whole of the first series, if not the first half of the first series, is not amazing. And then, like a lot of TV shows, it meandered away from what it had originally been pitched as and became brilliant because of that. But that you sort of need to get through that bit first before you can watch the rest of it or something.
Well, people are always saying to me, like, oh, you like The Office and you like Broad City, like, this is a kind of the kind of thing you'd really, really enjoy. The Office US, that first season sticks quite strictly to The Office UK's scripts in the first season, and, like, for that it's not very good because it actually just needs to become its own quite different show. So if you watch the first 3 episodes of The Office US, you might not be like, oh, this is a brilliant show, and it is, like, a brilliant, brilliant show, perhaps.
Yeah, so maybe we should
go in for a random series or something.
Push through. And also, I mean, I've seen quite a lot of GIFs on Tumblr of, is it Ron, one of the characters in Parks and Rec? Ron.
Yeah.
And he looks amazing, so...
Yeah, and also, aren't you a bit of an Amy Poehler fan?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so...
So I don't know why I don't like it. But anyway, thank you very much for your email, Matthew, and we'll definitely give that a proper go.
And we've had an email from Dale, who says, hello, I wondered if you had seen the speculation about Harry / 1D's response to Taylor Swift's style in their new song, Perfect. Dale? I'm so glad you asked. I have a lot of thoughts about this. Yeah, I think, basically, context, for people who don't know what this is, Taylor Swift had a single called Style.
A really brilliant single.
Yeah, very catchy chorus, which I personally feel like has a lot of One Direction references in. So Style, Harry Styles, Taylor Swift and Harry Styles dated for 3 months in like the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. There are other things in there about them driving around. In there's paparazzi shots similar to what they're singing about in the song. One of the things that I think is really interesting is the refrain is just her singing. Like the bridge is her singing Take Me Home over and over and over again, which is the name of a One Direction album, as we all know. And then One Direction have just released a song called Perfect with a very similar sounding chorus.
Yeah, musically it's very similar.
Very, very similar, like sort of structurally and just in how it sounds, in that sometimes songs can be similar and you don't realise, but like everyone was like, this sounds a lot like Taylor Swift's Style. Style is about like a perfect relationship that's like completely unachievable. So she's like saying, oh, we'll never go out of style. Like, you look like James Dean, I look like the classic girl. And it's all a bit like, actually, this is never real. There's a reason this sounds like a movie and not like real life. Perfect is the same thing. So it's this, you know, completely perfect sounding relationship. And then the bridge kind of undercuts that and says like, oh, but this is obviously unachievable. And there are lots of little references to Swift in there. I think that's really interesting, the way the songs are like kind of in conversation, basically. And I think it's really cool.
Has there been any explicit confirmation of that?
No, and I kind of think it's a bit boring to be like, oh, is this about Taylor Swift?
Yes or
no. Because
I'm
kind of like, does it matter whether it's about Taylor Swift or not? Whether they've intentionally been like, oh, we'll make this song about Harry and Taylor's relationship. What they have done is kind of made a song that talks to another song. Mm. And I think that's really cool.
I quite like the song as well.
Me too. I love the song.
It was really good.
I think it's one of their best new ones. I kind of listened to the other two singles off their upcoming album, but this one I actually really like. Mm.
So the first thing we're going to talk about this week is the new film The Lobster, which is a really, really strange film, I'm just going to say right off the bat. I've seen it described as like a dating dystopia, which I think is probably quite a good description for it. It's quite complicated, so before we start saying what we think of it, maybe we should just outline roughly the world it sits in. It's a world that looks quite a lot like our own, but has this key difference that you are not allowed to be alone ever. Everyone must be in a couple. So if your partner dies or leaves you or anything, you have 45 days to find someone else and become a couple. Otherwise you get turned into an animal, basically. Yeah. So the main character, David, is played by Colin Farrell, and his girlfriend, partner, wife, we never really meet her, has just left him. So he has checked into this special hotel, which is supposed to help him find another partner in the 45 days allotted.
Have you ever been on your own before?
No, never.
Your last relationship lasted how many years?
12.
Sexual preference?
Women.
Any children?
No.
And the dog?
No. This is my brother. He was here a couple of years ago, but he didn't make it.
Good morning. 44 days left. Breakfast is served.
As you understand from your brother's experience,
if you fail to fall in love with someone during your stay here, you'll turn into an animal.
Yeah, that's basically the setup. It all kind of goes from there. It's a really, really black comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really dark and quite uncomfortable at times. What did you make of it?
Someone I went to see it with said it was a bit like Black Mirror.
Yeah, it did have that feel
sort
about
of
it.
Kind of on acid, because it's more stylized than Black Mirror. And Black Mirror is already quite stylized, but everyone speaks in a very specific tone, which is quite void of emotion. Almost a bit Wes Anderson-y, the speech patterns, but not quite, because they don't speak very fast and they speak very deliberately.
I overheard someone on the way out of the cinema saying that he thought it was like shit Wes Anderson.
Oh, really?
So you're not the only person to have thought that.
I don't know, but I didn't think the rest of the film was very Wes Anderson-y.
I guess it was set in a hotel.
Set in a hotel. It's quite unified aesthetically, I thought. It's kind of visually, I felt, split into two halves, which is the half in the hotel and the half in the woods. And then there are moments where they go to the city in between.
Mm.
And I don't really know what I make of it. I thought it was interesting. I like to see films like it, which are weird and make you think strange things. I don't know if I thought maybe it was a bit extreme. Like, it depends whether you come away thinking, oh, that was a great comedy, or like, oh, that was a film like with a message.
Mm.
If it was trying to be a film with a message, then it was a bit heavy-handed. If it's just trying to be a comedy, then I would have liked it to have been a little bit funnier.
Yeah, I have to say, I felt the same. It sort of fell in between the two in a way that perhaps wasn't quite so successful. And it also definitely, it sort of diminished in its comedy during the film, I felt. So like the first half where he's in this hotel and he's having to abide by all of these rules, and you know, he's having hilarious deadpan conversations with the staff. For instance, when David first checks in, he has to complete this kind of questionnaire where he gets asked, what is your sexual orientation?
This really stuck with me as well.
Yeah, this is, what is your sexual orientation? And he's like, well, you know, mostly women, but you know, I have had a homosexual relationship. And they're like, you can be either heterosexual or homosexual, but you have to decide now.
Yeah, he's like, is there a bisexual option? And they're like, no, we've had admin problems with that in the past. So you have to pick one.
It's all so completely cold and clinical and just like, this isn't people's feelings they're talking about. Actually, must give a shout out to Olivia Colman playing the hotel manager,
who
was absolutely fantastic. Best thing in the film, I thought. When she sort of interviews him and firstly asks him about the dog he's brought with him, who it turns out is his brother, who checked into the hotel 2 years ago but didn't find someone to fall in love with.
Yeah, quote unquote, didn't make it, as they all say.
And became a dog. And she asks David, has he decided what animal he wants to be? He's like, a lobster. And he has a really complicated set of reasons why, which include, like, I like the sea, and they live for a really long time. When it was inside the hotel, and there were all these kind of rules and alarms and strange interactions with other kind of inmates, I did find it funny. I was laughing. And I felt like riffing on the various sort of rules of the world was good. And then when he sort of escapes from the hotel and goes to live in the woods, it all sort of fell apart a bit for me.
I mean, this is a fairly violent film, though all the violence is implied. You don't really see very much violence actually happening.
Yeah, it's kind of gross, though.
Yeah, but you see a lot of blood and a lot of, like, people moaning in pain and that kind of thing. For me, when the violence got a bit extreme, that's when I kind of, like, lost my ability to laugh a bit. And maybe that's something about me as a viewer rather than a problem with the film, because obviously a lot of people like to have that film experience where they feel uncomfortable, but they also know it's funny. But for me, there was a line in it in the second half of the film where they're all hiding out away from the hotel in the woods, where you see two people who've been a victim of a punishment in the woods, and they talk about another punishment that could have happened to them. And that's all it is. It's just a line saying, oh, well, it's not as bad as this punishment. And it was so gross that I was like, I can't, I've lost my ability to engage now from this point onwards.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. I felt the same, although I hadn't pinpointed it to that moment, but you're absolutely right, that's what it was. And the people in the film, the whole way through, I had this sense that they look like people, but they don't behave entirely like people, in that they are much quicker to violence than you feel like people in this world would be in the same situation.
Maybe, but it probably is a comment on the situation of, like, if people regulate your emotions, do you become increasingly volatile? Which is probably true.
And I suppose also it's quite opaque as a film, so it's quite hard, at least I found it quite hard to discern anybody's motive. So, like, the group that he joins in the woods, they're sort of the antithesis of what's going on in the hotel, because they call themselves the loners. And although initially you can tell he feels like he's free, he's escaped from the hotel, actually he's just joined another group with as many rules, but they're just the opposite of the other rules. So in that group, everyone has to be alone all the time. You're allowed to be friendly and sort of companionable with other people, and you're allowed to kind of help each other in a purely platonic sense, but there can be no romantic attachment at all. If there's any evidence of flirting, whatever, you get punished, and hence the punishment that you mentioned. Because they live out in the woods, and just their life is a lot more sort of brutal and kind of elemental, and it feels like they're a lot closer to the harsh truth of life. So, like, they all dig their own graves. They decide where they want to be buried when the time comes, and they dig their own graves and stuff like that. And that is interesting, but also the sort of the leader of this group, she seems to have an agenda, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's funny, because essentially the difference between the hotel and the woods, as you say, they're the same in that they have the same strict ideologies about relationships, except one has this whole backing of, like, bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And then one doesn't. It just seems to be this leader implementing her own thoughts. It's much more of a dictatorship. And for that reason can be much more unpredictable. And so sometimes you see her, you never see this, but you know that she's given people quite violent punishments. And then for the characters that we care about, she doesn't seem to do that. She seems to just do much weirder stuff, crueler stuff.
David, Colin Farrell's character, he gradually falls in love with Rachel Weisz's character in the woods. She's also a loner who lives on her own. They've bonded over the fact that they're both short-sighted. So she takes...
Well, bonded is like they basically, to have a relationship, you have to share a, quote, defining characteristic.
Yes, that's the rule of the world on both sides.
Yeah, and his defining characteristic is short-sightedness.
Yeah, and there's another couple, the character that Ben Whishaw plays, his defining characteristic is that he has a limp.
Yes, and he falls in love with a character whose defining characteristic is that she has nosebleeds.
So he has to pretend to have nosebleeds.
So they have something in common and can be an official couple.
And actually one of the sweetest bits of the film is when a new lot of people, quite in the beginning, when a new lot of people arrive at the hotel, and one of his sort of mates he's made is like, oh, I think I saw a woman with a limp. And he's like, it's just a sprained ankle. She'll be better in a few days.
That's a shame.
And he's so sad about it. But yeah, so you
that
have to...
That made me laugh so much as well. The first time someone said, my defining characteristic is I've got a limp. Yeah. It just made me laugh. So I love the idea of going around being like, my defining characteristic is I'm obsessed with One Direction.
Yeah. But it's not... You'd probably have to be like, that I have brown hair. It seems to have...
That's what I said. I would, if it was me forced to come down to it, I'd be like, yeah, my defining characteristic is that I have two ears. Yeah. And then I'd definitely find a partner.
You wouldn't want to go too specific. There were bits, and I noticed at the beginning the credits, because it's very much a kind of... It's not a big studio movie, this. Like, it's sort of been backed by lots of different smaller production companies and things. Some of the money has come from Canal Plus in France. Yeah. I don't know whether this is a good or bad thing, but I did have the thought popped into my head about halfway through. I was like, this film is very French.
Yeah.
Like, not, I don't mean in the sense that it was set in France, it wasn't set in Ireland. and it did have some French actors in, but it wasn't that. It was just the sort of strange gnomic quality of it.
Yeah.
And the use of music in it, the kind of quite bold, like low cello sound and stuff like that, and very little other sort of background music. Somehow, and just the sheer randomness of, like, this is a very French film.
It was kind of trying to be a French art house film,
yeah.
Right? That's kind of the vibe that I got from it. I do think, to its credit, the stuff at the beginning, the first half I did find really funny.
Yeah.
I was laughing.
And that was clever writing. A lot of those deadpan lines, especially delivered by someone like Olivia Colman, were really funny.
And it is nice to see a film that does... It is strange like that and does make you a bit uncomfortable and does make you think, like, what are they trying to say here? Mm. I mean, I'm still not sure.
I still don't know, and I'm not sure I ever will be. Yeah, I suppose, I don't know why I have this lingering sense of disappointment about it. I don't know what I wanted it to be that it wasn't.
Yeah, I think maybe because it did start, when something starts better than it ends, perhaps, that can be a bit disappointing. Can I also shout out to the two men behind me in the cinema who were watching it and kept saying stuff that was happening on screen, but like 5 minutes after everyone else had realised that was about to happen?
I had a really good bit of audience interaction in my screening when it doesn't really end, this film. It just sort of like cuts to black at a random point.
Yeah.
About 15 minutes after I decided that I was ready for it to end,
it did
that. And then as soon as it cut to black, there was kind of, whenever there's a sudden ending in a film, there was like this kind of slightly shocked silence in the cinema.
Yes, the audience are forced to wake themselves from there.
And a man at the end of my row just went really loudly, "That was fucking weird." There was no like tutting or sense of disapproval. There was just this kind of murmur of assent in the cinema. And everyone was like, what that guy said.
It was indeed fucking weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very conflicted about this film. I'm not sure I would watch it again, for instance.
No, I don't think I'd watch it again. But also, weirdly, I wouldn't be like, yeah, I really enjoyed that film. Like, that's not the right word. But I would still probably recommend it to people because I think it's an interesting film to decide whether you like or not, even if I'm not sure that I did like it, like, loads.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, it is marketing itself as a, quote, hilarious comedy.
Yes, which is interesting.
Which is not quite how it, obviously, but it's hard to market yourself as, like, quote, fucking weird, end quote.
So. Although, actually, something I did think when I was walking home from the cinema is, would I feel differently about this film if it had subtitles?
Because then you'd be like, this is a serious movie.
Because then I'd be like, this is a serious foreign film.
Yeah,
therefore,
maybe.
You know. If it was like in Polish or something.
Yeah, maybe we would.
Yeah.
So I would say go out there, listeners, and discover it and see what your opinion is.
And let us know if you have any better idea what it's about.
Yeah. For the second part of today's podcast, we're going to talk about Lorde, goth wonder girl Lorde. She's had a new song out in the last few weeks with Disclosure called Magnets, with a suitably moody video that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I love her videos.
Yeah, she's great. I love the way she dances in all her videos. So we just thought that was a good excuse to kind of talk about our love for Lorde. Yeah, so Caroline, should we start with the video? What did you think of her recent video?
I really liked it. As I say, I can't think of actually a single video of hers that I've seen that I don't really like.
No.
I like how kind of alone she is in them and how self-contained. I just like seeing women doing what they do on their own and really enjoying it in a way that, like, as much as I, you know, I like good dance routines or whatever, just having a woman on her own up there really,
and really she dances
that.
By herself in a lot of her videos, which
she
is
dances
a really nice
by
thing
herself
to see.
Like, is it maybe the video for Royals where she's like standing in the middle of the road?
I think that's Yellow Flicker
Beat. Is that Yellow Flicker Beat, where she's sort of standing in the middle of the road, just like singing into the dark on the edge of the road?
That's such a great
And movie. I really, really like that.
She's committed to that as well, which is something I really like to see. I like to see a pop star in general who's like really committed to a vibe.
Mm.
You kind of know what you're getting with Lorde, even though she still can surprise you like that. Her most recent video surprised me a bit. You kind of have a sense of what you want from a Lorde video. You want it to be moody. You want crazy dancing by herself and just like being in charge of her own emotions and not really caring what people around her are thinking. And this most
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot,
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Video is part of like a whole line, I think, of videos lately of women pop stars who are hit girls.
Yeah.
So that's basically the plot of this video. Is it looks like a cheating narrative. Off Mulholland, he was talking. I was wondering about you and that girl. She your girlfriend, face from heaven. Bet the world she don't know. So you have Lord and this guy at a party kind of exchanging sexy looks, and then you see that this guy's got a girlfriend, and then they're like making out in his house really like enthusiastically. And then there's a moment in the video where you see that the guy's girlfriend has got like a black eye, and that's like the turn of the video. And then you realise that the girlfriend has hired Lord to kind of seduce him and eventually kill him. And it ends with her like pushing him into a pool and then setting alight some oil on the top of the pool surface. And he's kind of like tied to a chair at the bottom.
Yeah, it's definitely, I feel like it fits in with Rihanna's Bitch Better Have My Money. Although I wasn't a massive fan of it. Taylor Swift's Bad Blood video.
Yeah, Bad Blood, which I think was like the rubbish version.
That was the rubbish version. Which incidentally, sorry, brief sidebar on Bad Blood. I cannot look at without thinking this is exactly the same as the Cameron Diaz Charlie Angels film.
Oh yeah.
Like women, like skinny women wearing black leather things with like lots of fire that they're walking away from. It's just the, yeah, it's the
it's
McG
kind of the pits,
Charlie Angels
it?
Film from the early noughties.
Yeah, well, and there's also been a couple more. So do you know Ellie Goulding's done one? It's very Bitch Better Have My Money. It's like some guy and they like take all his money at the end, but there's no real violence in that one. Mm. Demi Lovato's just done one where she's like up against this other woman, and then you realise it's not actually about the other woman and that they're like in a pact. So it's like got a very similar turn to all these videos have a similar kind of turn in the halfway through.
Yeah, there's a kind of female solidarity through violence.
Yeah,
narrative,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Which although Bad Blood is the one that doesn't have that turn and doesn't have that surprising, maybe
which is
one of the reasons it's not so great. And I think also perhaps we're stretching to if we say that Rihanna's Bitch Better Have My Money is female solidarity through violence, because that woman is sort of thrown under the bus, essentially.
Yeah,
but she does look like she's having fun by the end.
Yeah, and also she has her, like, two, like, helper people who are very much
the
like...
The gang.
Yeah, with her. Without wanting to sort of read too much into it, why do we reckon that this trend is emerging now?
Well, I think in the same way that feminism kind of became a bit of a trend, and like Beyonce was like, yeah, feminism with her banner behind it, though Beyonce I do think has, you know, proper feminist credentials. I'm not trying to patronise her understanding of feminism. You know, all that kind of stuff where it was like, yeah, kind of like girl power trend. I think in that same way, that kind of joke misandry has become a very popular thing to do and be like, oh yeah, lol, kill all men, I don't really mean it, blah, blah, blah. And I think that this is kind of an aesthetic extension of that, being like, oh yeah, let's just like shoot the guy in this video. And also it's a chance for women to have those kinds of videos, because it is like in some genres of music, it's pretty common to have a narrative where you're like some big criminal, basically.
Yeah.
Like that's not that unusual. So it's nice to see women doing those, but to varying degrees of success. And I actually think the Lord one was probably one of the best ones. I think apart from Rihanna's, I think Lord's was one of the best because...
Yeah, I agree with that.
You buy it from her a lot more, don't you? Because she is, in a sense, like Rihanna, she is someone whose success is predicated on your idea of her being in control of her image and her being a little bit dark and being experimental and being someone who might sing about violence in the same way that her video might contain violence. There's something notable, I think, about the other videos in which they're lyrically clearly about something else and the violence is just like something that they've added in for the video. And while that might be actually the case in this most recent Lord song, because it is about, you know, two people meeting in the lyrics, there is something in the rest of Lord's kind of lyrical output. You have that expectation almost for a strain of violence in there somewhere. Even if she's just using it as metaphor and stuff, she does engage with those kinds of concepts. So I think it's just a bit more convincing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And also, I think, as you say, the fact that you don't know everything about the video at the beginning is always... Because, I mean, music videos are... I feel like they're increasingly longer these days, actually, especially the ones that have a whole kind of short film narrative around them. But they're still, we're talking like 5-6 minutes.
Yeah.
But within that time, it's perfectly possible to surprise and shock and tell a story and all this stuff. And the best videos do that. Boring music videos are the ones where I can tell what the entire 6 minutes is going to be like from the first like 5 frames. Rihanna's one and Lord's one. I mean, as you mentioned, Lord's one's got this kind of pivot in the middle when you see her black eye and you realise actually what's going on. Rihanna's one's got multiple ones in. Like, I'm thinking particularly of that motif that we talked about, I think, on the podcast before, of the legs in the trunk.
Oh, yeah, like
right at the beginning, you don't know.
Yeah.
Even if you approach that video having read some of the coverage of it,
You'd think it would be a dead body
when actually it's Rihanna. Like, you know.
And, but also the main turn in that is probably when you realise she's not after this woman, she's after the woman's husband.
Yeah, and the money, basically. Yeah. So I think the best examples of this trend and of just music videos generally, take the viewer a bit more seriously and imagine that maybe they can understand more than one concept in the space of a 6-minute film.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, probably why those two are the more successful ones. But yeah, what do you think about Lord in general? Because I love her. I just think she's brilliant.
I'm massively pro her. I know Royals was such a big song, but it's really not my favourite.
No, I think that often happens in that, like, I was always a big Arctic Monkeys fan growing up and I never really got behind I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor, and it's not really like the rest of their output. I don't really like One Direction, What Makes You Beautiful. Like, they're often the first single... Maybe it's just because you hear it so many times, but I think it cannot be as good as some of the other stuff. I still think Royals has got like some really great lyrics in.
It is a good song. One of my sort of like favourite YouTube procrastinating things is like acoustic versions of Lord songs. And there are, both by her and by other people, there are some really nice acoustic covers of that song. Because I don't know, maybe just the final edit versions of it was a bit more produced than I like from her. I don't know.
One of the things I really love about Lord as well is that you couldn't really ever just sit down and listen to one Lord song. In the way that you might, like, sit down and listen to a Drake song. Like, I can sit and listen to Hotline Bling maybe 30 times and not want to go and, like, listen to the rest of Drake's output necessarily. Whereas with Lord, if you listen to one of her songs, she gets you in such a specific atmosphere. She's really good at just evoking that kind of, like, outsidery feel of, like, watching other people have fun and getting you into that kind of mindset that you then want to listen to all her other songs. And I love listening to that Pure Heroine album.
Yeah, just same.
I can listen to it like 4 times in a row and it really just like changes the way I look at things and stuff when I'm listening to it. I think it's a really evocative and cool thing that she's managed to produce something that's so kind of unified sonically. It's really, really nice.
That album is, I think, one of the best of the last few years in terms of, you know, that general thing that gets harked about in music criticism all the time about people don't make albums anymore. They just make songs.
Which is something they've been saying since like 1959.
Yeah, except that it's recently blaming, you know, downloading, that, well, people just want to pay 79p for one song, or they want to listen to one song on Spotify. They don't want to, you know, sit down and wear their jumper and listen to the whole vinyl or whatever it is that music critics do. But I feel like she's such a perfect reply to that. It's like, no, actually, I made this and you should listen to it all the way through.
And I remember before that album even came out, she had a kind of mixtape. I can't remember what it was called now, and it's got like her surrounded by some like flowers as a drawing on the cover. That as well was really like unified, even though it was only kind of like 5 songs. So I'm really excited to see what she produces next, because you kind of know it's going to... Because she's obviously had other songs out. She's had Yellow Flicker Beat for the Hunger Games movie. She's done this with Disclosure.
I really like that. That's one of my favourite Lord songs.
Yellow Flicker Beat. It's so good. She, again...
Also, have you heard the Kanye remix of that?
No.
It is amazing.
Oh, how fun. Have you heard her? Because she did a cover of Kanye's Hold My Liquor. Because you wouldn't think that that would translate to like a 16-year-old girl singing that on stage. And it does so amazingly. And it's so dark the way she does it. Oh, it's so great.
But yeah, no, can't, there's a... Because I was just browsing on her YouTube channel, you know. Yeah, she's uploaded like a Kanye... And he's... I don't know how he's done it. He's clearly... Well, he's genius, obviously. But like, he's mixed her vocals a lot higher.
Right.
And just made it sound a lot like crunchier. I don't know.
That sounds fun.
It's really good.
Yeah, I'll definitely listen to that. Oh my God, imagine a proper like Kanye Lord collab would be so good. Because Yeezus, that kind of like really, again, unified, troubling, dark vein through that album. Mm. You kind of get that a bit, although they're obviously very different sounding albums in her stuff.
I'm a princess cut from marble, smoother than a storm. And the scars that mark my body, they're silver and gold. My blood is a flood, the ruby's precious stones. It keeps my veins hot, the fire's found a home in me. I move through town, I'm quiet like a fire.
So last week, I recommended Anna the BBC sitcom As Time Goes By, starring Judi Dench and Jeffrey Palmer. Anna, what did you think of this?
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yay, really I'm funny. So glad you like this.
There are things that I like and things that I don't like, though. For example, to explain this, the first episode setup, which weirded me out, is there's a woman called Jean who runs a secretary agency, and she sends out her girls to different people to do secretary work. Her daughter's essentially a partner or deputy in the business, and she has a difficult, not necessarily a difficult client or customer, but basically one of the secretaries on the books does a bad job with a novelist who's working on his book. The daughter, Judith, goes to see this guy to kind of be like, oh God, I'm so sorry.
To like smooth things over, basically.
We'll get someone who's really, really brilliant, our best girl. And she's kind of like, you know, we have no idea how this person slipped through the net. We normally only have excellent secretaries, etc. And then during the course of the conversation, he asks her out for dinner. And they go out for this dinner, and he goes to pick her up from her house where she lives with her mum. And there's a kind of moment of like recognition between Jean and Lionel, the guy that she's going on this date with. And then they go out for dinner, and he sort of asks her quite a bit about her mum. And Judith's a bit like, why did you keep asking me about my mum? And then he's like, oh, okay, maybe I thought I recognised her from somewhere. And then it turns out that they've had like this massive romance and haven't seen each other for years because Lionel got sent to Korea in the 50s and never wrote. But it turns out he did write. The letter just didn't make it, saying, here's how to reach me, this is my address. So he thinks that Jean never wrote. So they're like, oh, our romance lost over this letter. And it's never like, oh, okay, well now we'll get back together at all. They just then start appearing in their lives. But the bit that I don't like is this strain where it's like, Judith, the daughter, is like hitting on Lionel all the time, and he kind of fancies
her
that's back.
Weird.
And like, it's just kind of like accepted that it would be okay and normal for someone's daughter to date their mum's ex, I'm just like, this is not normal, it's awful.
To be fair, they drop that after the first series because it's obviously awful.
Yeah, it's so weird. But
yeah, that is a really weird strain of it.
Yeah, so that's the bit, those are the bits that I like the least, all the kind of jokes about like, oh, she's got nice legs. I hated all those bits, but to counter that, the bits that I really liked were all the bits where Judi Dench goes on like a feminist bent, which happens quite regularly.
She does that quite a lot.
And I loved all those moments. So because she's obviously like a very successful businesswoman, and like there's a running thread that the secretaries who work for her think she's really harsh and call her nicknames like Iron Drawers. So she's often going on little rants to kind of defend herself, or, you know, she'll keep in check Lionel's kind of like flirting with her daughter by, you know, saying, she's just very good on like getting on her soapbox and being like, well, it's okay for you because you're a man. And those were my favourite bits because they're really funny, but they're also, you're also like, yes, that's so true.
and that's actually why I came to like it, incidentally, because that doesn't go away in future series, but it gets applied to more and more different subjects. So like, spoiler alert for a thing that was on 25 years ago, she and Lionel do eventually get back together.
No way.
And their relationship moves at a kind of glacial pace. And so everything that happens, so like, them moving in together, him wanting her to like retire so they can spend more time together, all of these things really get analysed by her character and talked about and discussed. And they're all issues of how do you handle a relationship where you as the woman are the most successful professionally and financially, and you own the house that you live in, and you know, he feels inadequate because of that, you know. How do you deal with the fact that your partner wants you to give up work, but you really don't want to? Because so all of this gets kind of talked about in a way that I'd never seen on television when I first watched this. And it also, I saw it as repeats on, I don't know, some random channel.
UK TV Gold.
Probably when I was in my teens. And it just so happened that I started watching it at the point when my mum had been made redundant from her job and my sister was still quite little, and she was deciding whether she wanted to look for another job or not, or whether she wanted to do something else. She eventually decided she wanted to go back to college and like do some more training and stuff and do something else. But it felt like the kind of discussions that were happening in my house were reflected on television. That always draws you to something, you know?
There's a really nice scene, actually, where Lionel and Jean are out for dinner and someone comes in and she's like, oh, hello. And then she's like, oh, I used to know that guy. And he was like, really? Did you know him well? And she's like, oh, well, he proposed to me, actually. And he's like, why did you say no? And she's like, how do you know I said no? And he's like, well, you'd be over there with him if you'd said yes, presumably. So I just assumed you said no. Like, and then he's like, well, I guess he's handsome. She says something like, why do you think I would have married him? And he's like, oh, for the security. Jean says, security? I've got security. Like, I've built my life. I've got my house. I've got my money. Like, I've got security. I don't want security from a man. I want, you know, something rather more exciting than that. And I thought that was the kind of assumption that because she's like a middle-aged to old woman, that she wouldn't want excitement or, you know, sexual attraction.
Yeah, like
or,
a romantic partner.
Yeah, she'd want security. I liked getting rid of that assumption immediately.
Yeah. What did you think of the character of Alistair?
He's after Jean.
So he's Lionel's publisher and he's much younger, and he's after Jean in an improbable way. Also, they drop that storyline quite swiftly because he's
much younger in quotation marks, but he's not that young. Like, there's a lot of jokes about him being a toy boy, but he's not that young. Yeah, he was annoying.
Yeah, he doesn't get less annoying.
No, he was really annoying. And then there's like, I assume this doesn't happen, but they kind of try and pair him off with Judith.
Oh no, that happens.
Oh, does it? Because it's like,
they get married in the end.
No, really?
I mean by the end. So like, because this ran for lots and lots of series, then it stopped and they did various like specials. And I think one of the subsequent specials was like their wedding.
Oh, well, that surprises me because they didn't seem particularly compatible. I thought it was kind of like a joke that they were like, oh, we'll just pair them off together to get them away from us.
He changes quite a lot, actually. Okay. That's part of the like arc of that story. But yeah, that is
character development.
Yeah, that is where it ends up.
Okay, well, that's weird. But
he's so 80s. I love how 80s he is. He's constantly like showing off his car phone.
They've all got like 80s hair.
Yes.
And like there's a lot of kind of, I don't know, Diana-esque curtains and things. But yeah, no, I did. I really enjoyed all those moments where Judi Dench made me like, yeah, Judi Dench, you say it. You say it. So yeah, a good show.
Good, I'm glad you enjoyed it. So I am going on holiday to the Outer Hebrides, yay. So there will be no podcast next week because it's quite hard to do that when I'm in the Outer Hebrides and Anna is not. There'll be no podcast next week. The next one will be on the 9th of November. So for the 9th of November, Anna, what are you going to recommend me to do?
So I feel like this thing has come up in conversation quite a lot on the podcast, probably because I'm just obsessed with it. But I'm going to recommend you Chris Krause's I Love Dick. We were talking about it because it's sort of just appeared on my desk recently because they're finally publishing it in the UK. My copy is one that I had sent over from the States. But now we've got a nice shiny new edition with a nice cover that says I Love Dick in massive block letters, which is nice. And
I'm going to read that in public in the highly religious Outer Hebrides.
I read it on holiday with my boyfriend's family, so that was kind of awkward. But yeah, it's basically a book, just to put the title in context a little bit, it's about Chris Krause, who is the author and the kind of lead character in it, because it's kind of fictionalized but also based on her real life. Her and her husband meet this man called Dick, and she basically becomes obsessed with him and starts writing him letters. And that's the premise, but it obviously goes in weird and crazy directions, and I think you'll really enjoy it. It's quite theoretical in parts, so it can be a little heavy going sometimes, but I have no doubt that you'll manage that fine and hopefully enjoy it.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoy what we do, you might want to consider following us on Twitter at @SRSLYpod. We post links to things we've mentioned in the show, gifts we like, and all manner of other things you'll probably enjoy.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.